you can think of it as IOUs, or and credit is really the technical term. So it's like sending credit to your friends, sending credit to your peers. That credit's backed by you.
That credit can be used by other people your network.
Because you have a trust network, that credit can route through your peers to other people that you're not directly connected to.
And that credit limit is essentially your reputation within a trust network.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, your reputation's determined by your community. Your credit rating, right? Your community credit rating is determined by your peers. You know, and, you know, by the value that you bring to community, not just like the profit that you bring to a bank.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sovereign States of Mind, brought to you by A Family in Paradise. That is my family. We live off grid in Hawaii. We're working on developing a homestead, trying to become as autonomous as possible and be responsible for our own lives. Our YouTube channel videos are generally lots of fun, quick. The podcast is a way for us to get deeper into some of these topics. We'll be exploring some of the many principles of personal sovereignty and how we can explore and implement them into our lives, from homesteading to community building and self-reliance to Bitcoin, covering money and being sovereign over your own wealth, with some sprinkles of parenting, fitness, authentic relating, and gratitude tossed in the mix. No sponsors as of yet, so let's dive right into this week's conversation.
Sovereign States of Mind.
Well, sovereignty is really freedom and interdependence within a community. A community that is resilient and self-serving, self-sufficient, not seeking outside of that community, or not seeking authority to make things right. You know, taking care of things ourselves, taking care of things within our community without just calling the police or calling the calling your politician and trying to have rules changed in order to meet your needs. Sovereignty is growing your own food as a community, getting your own services, having your own money, right? Having your own communication networks, having your own resilience networks. That's what I think of when I think of sovereignty.
So let's separate it a bit here. What is the personal sovereignty of the individual? How does that play into the sovereignty of a community? What do individuals need to have, so to speak? What do they need to, what characteristics do sovereign individuals have within a sovereign community?
Well, sovereignty is an interesting idea. You know, humans are, I believe, naturally tribal species. You know, we are social, we need each other, we're interdependent with our community. As a sovereign individual, yes, we have the individual will to make things work and to thrive, you know, again, without calling upon your gigantor government to save you. You know, as a sovereign individual, we're saving ourselves. We're, you know, making, pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps or whatever, right? And like doing it, growing our own food, making our own connections, creating our own networks. Again, instead of just relying on the default networks, we're creating our own. We're developing trust amongst our community, doing our own permaculture on our personal properties, and as a local community, you know, working on social permaculture and developing. Again, I am of the perspective that humans need each other, that there's no sovereign individual without a community. Like, community is core to sovereignty. Community is core to sustainability and to freedom. But in choosing a sovereign community, we're choosing our own communities, choosing our own networks, not just relying on the default top-down chain or hierarchical authoritative network. Oh, this, you know, a good example would be relying on traditional financial networks, mm-hmm. as opposed to creating your own financial network or joining an open source financial community.
So we find ourselves in a community that values a lot of aspects of sovereignty. Whether we consider ourselves a sovereign community or not is another question. But how do they start? So here, for example, I was drawn here because of that. And even though the term sovereignty is fairly new to my life, like using it as a word and like realizing what that really entails for a human being is like, no, I want to be more sovereign with myself and realizing like, oh, I'm born into, like you said, these default networks of gigantor governments that tell me everything I need to do and how to do it and how to live and what to learn and what to do with my life. And like, I always was not into that, but I never associated that with the term sovereignty. Mm. So here I know that word is used a lot more frequently because it is a very sacred word, I think, and a very important term that people use. So do you know of any examples where these sovereign communities sprout up, or you've traveled a lot within this umbrella?
So here where we are on the Big Island is a really good example. And I see that we got to where we are because of a need. We live in an interesting climate where we're on a volcano. There's hurricanes, there's tsunamis, earthquakes, pandemics, right? You know, we've here on Big Island, we've had, in my experience here, the 10 years I've been here, it's been like kind of one natural disaster after another. Once we like heal up from one, another one is like ready, like on its tail, you know, whether it's hurricane or lava or pandemic. We've just needed, like, I remember that, you know, when I first got here, we had this like little, what did we call it? The finger. There was like a finger of lava just like creeping out towards the main road that connects our town to the rest of the island.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And basically had that lava kept going, our town would have been cut off.
But it magically stopped right before it.
Yeah. Magically stopped right before it hit the main road. But we were all preparing. We were getting our sovereignty groups together, our resilience groups together, you know, having weekly meetups and discussing how are we prepared for this? How are, you know, do we have our food resilience networks?
Well, before that, there's the question of, are we staying here or are we going to try to escape before that?
Yeah.
So you've already decided we're staying here.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people left, you know, anybody that had health issues dependent on hospitals, things like that, they all left. Like they were not going to wait around and see if the lava was going to take our road out. No, they had to get out of here because we don't have a hospital down here.
Right.
We don't have access like that. So people that were seriously in need, they left. But me, my family, we stayed. I mean, fortunately, the road did not get cut off, but we were all preparing.
Sure.
Like, meeting up regularly, creating resilience groups, resilience hubs, clarifying our food sovereignty networks. Right.
And so do those still exist since the emergency didn't happen, or was it kind of just left by the wayside?
Well, it was left a little bit at that time, but then we had another.
It plants these seeds.
Yeah. Then we had a hurricane, like, you know, a few months later, and power was cut off. Like my neighborhood wouldn't have power. And we had these giant trees blocking the roads. We literally couldn't leave my neighborhood for 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. And no power, you know, my house was on the grid at that time. So I was, you know, just filling up buckets of water from catchment tank. We're all on catchment in our area anyway. That's another part of what's unique about where we live is that
we have to be sovereign with our water, with our power.
That's right. Yeah.
Even if you're on the grid, it goes out.
A lot of the subdivisions here were built without infrastructure, without water, without power. Yeah,
which is awesome, which is why we love it.
That's right. That's and yeah, we have like more permaculture, experimental farm, eco-village type experiments going on.
And we have less
here.
Government giving a shit because that lack of infrastructure.
That's true. Yeah. Very few police, building code enforcement is like
enforcement of anything.
Yeah,
really.
Enforcement of anything is pretty
of private property.
Yeah, in our community, we take care of ourselves. You know, if there's a fire in the neighborhood, you run and grab buckets and hoses and shovels. Like,
have you experienced that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, the fire department will make it. Eventually they'll come down.
The house is down.
Yeah, they'll come down eventually, but you know, you gotta expect an hour at least. So yeah, there's a fire, it's like you're grabbing the buckets because you don't want, I mean, you want to help your neighbors, but you know, you don't want that fire to spread to the whole community, right? It's
right.
Like, you know, we are interdependent whether you like it or not, you know. Yeah, if there's a fire and you ignore it, like, that fire is just going to spread and your house is going to burn down too. So yeah, we have to help each other. We have to look out for each other. We are like intimately dependent on each other.
Well, so going back to what you were originally saying about, one disaster after another, I remember hearing, I wasn't here for the 2018 lava flow. Mm-hmm. I left right before. I was staying with you, actually.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like, I left like a week before or something crazy, but, they were telling me how over on the road, there were like camps set up for distributing food to people.
Yep.
A lot of people down in that area that I guess kind of got, were people blocked off from getting out at the time? Did people have to get like,
well,
or people made it out in time?
People made it out. I have a friend who, you know, stayed on his property until the very last minute.
Just for the story.
Yeah, maybe just for the story, but he actually had to boat out. So it was like the lava's coming, there's no road. So he
had to take a boat out.
Yeah. Yeah, this boat, you took it out. So, you know, that's just how it is. Like, yeah, some people just love their lands. It's like,
but these little community, I don't even know what the term would be.
Well, we
be,
had a resilience hub. That's what it was called. Yeah.
Well, and it sprouts up when the need is there. Like, people are ready to be like, okay, let's go help each other.
Yeah. The hub is what we called it. Mm. And people could go there and get food. No questions were asked.
Mm.
It wasn't like a Red Cross, whatever. Oh, okay. Let me see your documents and you can apply here. And no, it was just our community.
And then where'd that food come from?
From our community. Yeah. Mm. Donations. People donated. Yeah. There's no big infrastructure that came in and took care of us, you know?
It reminds me of a book I have it here somewhere. It's called A Paradise Built in Hell. And it's all about the resilience community networks that sprout up in the wake of big disasters. So they reference like Katrina in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, I remember
they
that.
Referenced like the 1913 San Francisco earthquake. I don't know what year it was exactly. Oh. And the Chicago fires and all these relevant examples.
I love
and,
that theme. Yeah.
Yeah. How that just happens. And it doesn't matter anymore your social class, how wealthy you are or poor you are. It's like you're all just human.
We got to take care of each other. We got to take. In order to take care of ourselves, we got to take care of each other. So, yeah, you just got to step up and do it, because otherwise you don't have food. You know, we don't have ice to keep our food cool. You know,
right.
We had that was one thing that happened in our community. You know, the people that had the big solar freezers, they said, come over, you know,
put
your water bottles in. You know, get your ice packs and take care of yourselves. Cause yeah, we were without power for a while. And it was tricky. And then we had a crew going around house to house with the generator saying, hey, we got the generator.
Oh yeah.
You want to, you know, get some power, fill up your bathtub so you can flush your toilets. Mm. Right. And I don't know, like, and yeah, they were just shouting. They were just shouting house to house, hey, we got the generator. You guys need a generator for an hour?
Yeah, it's like you're in some developing country all of a sudden. Yeah, selling things on the street and not even selling.
That was some place, you know, it's something I experienced too while traveling in developing mm-hmm. countries. I remember being in Thailand and I was staying in a small neighborhood and, you know, it was the fire situation. There was a fire mm-hmm. and I look outside, everybody's running. There's people running, screaming, fire, 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 right? Everybody's running by, screaming fire. So you come out and you go, what's going on? Oh, geez, there's a house on fire down the road. What do we do? Okay, grab a bucket, grab a hose, grab a shovel, and run over there and help with the bucket brigade, you know?
Because,
yeah, the fire department, they might come eventually, you know, but it's, not going to be for a while, and they're probably not going to be able to help that much.
I remember I lived in Bangkok when there were these big floods flooding the whole area. Yeah. 2011, I think it was. And school was canceled. I was a teacher at the time. And like, so we were just wandering around kind of interested in like, what's going on in these flooded areas? And it turns out the whole thing was a conspiracy because they should have opened the levees and the Bangkok downtown should have flooded. But they didn't, and they let the suburbs just get destroyed. And so I took a bus out during that time, and you just see people on little canoes, like just going through the streets. But I remember in downtown Bangkok, in the spot where like it was kind of like on the border, people just made their own roads out of like plywood or whatever it was, and you just walk on it. And I remember we were just like cruising around, like right through people's neighborhoods and houses. They just made these little roads, like,
yeah. I mean, saying that, I think, you know, sovereignty is really a mindset too of like, again, just not waiting for the
authority
to come fix things. You know, it's like, this is our community. We are all fundamental, like pillars in our community, holding it up and taking that responsibility, claiming that responsibility, and like,
that's, I think, the really crucial point here. It's not just taking the responsibility, it's acknowledging it.
Yeah.
It's claiming it.
Yeah. And we're core to this community. It's not a top down thing. Like we're the ones holding it up. You know, we're the power. And you know, saying that too, it's like government is a reflection of us too, right?
But supposed to be.
Yeah. Right, supposed to be. But yeah, we can't just rely on these top down, systems. You know, we got to just take care of ourselves. Like, I think there is a tendency specifically in first world countries, probably, to just take for granted that government's going to like take care of you, and
as if it's going to take care of you forever,
right?
As if it cares about you.
That's right.
As if it actually cares about you.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, a sovereign mindset, right? A sovereign individual is someone who's like, oh, something's up. What do I do to take care of this? To help this, you know? And that might be calling the right people, right? That might be calling somebody calling somebody who knows what they're doing more, but it's about stepping up and taking the responsibility. I think of the example of I don't remember the effect, but in a city where you go to a big city and someone might be having, I don't know, an epileptic attack or something, right? And most people will just keep walking, assuming that somebody else is going to take care of it. But it's a big mind shift to say, oh no, I'm here
right now.
I see this happening. I got to take care of this because maybe nobody else will. I think a lot of that also ignited a memory in me too. I have a couple of like, you know, purpose projects, you know, that I'm like, that I drive. They're not really profitable things, but I push them and I market them and I promote them because I don't, you know, other people don't see the value of them quite as much as I do.
Yet.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. They don't see the value of them quite as much as I do yet. And I'm the one. It's like, you know, I'm personally a spiritual person. I'm like, I believe that we have like sparks of life from the creator, and we have like specific soul purpose here. And if we don't, if that spark ignites and we don't like jump with it,
burn with it.
Or I think of like notes on a scale, you know, we all got our note, our overtone note that we're like good at playing, or if you think of reeds blowing in the wind, you know, if you're stagnant and you're not blowing with the wind, you're not singing with that song, you're not singing your note, not
then the symphony isn't as complete.
That's right.
The piece isn't there.
It's gotta ignite your spark. Gotta, you know, the hippies, you know, we say go with the flow, right? But part of that flow is like when the spark ignites, you gotta light with that individual spark. You gotta ignite with that individual spark.
And let's jump into there. I mean, one of the big reasons I'm taking this podcast so seriously and starting this YouTube channel is because that's my spark. And as many, I tried to be an entrepreneur and do all, I just need to make content and share stories and talk. That's just like my spark, and I can't help it. And I fought it for so long. I mean, I went with it for a while, but I didn't know how to like convert it into a livelihood because I didn't care. I didn't want to play those rules. And then after some time, it's like, okay, no, that's my spark. That's what I got to follow. And to hell with how I make it work. Like it'll work. That's the spark. That's my hippiness, my spirituality coming in, is just acknowledging after some time of kind of hiding from it and choosing to live in, I don't want to say fear, but living in the mentality of like, no, things got to make sense. You kind of got to be linear about how you're going to, you know, make money in this world, how you're going to pass something on to your kids, and realizing that's just not the way I play. That's not how I believe the universe plays. Mm. That's not how I see it. Like, no, that spark needs to be followed.
Yeah. Nobody's going to say the things that you're going to say except for you.
Right.
So you just got to claim your sovereignty and believe in your God-given authority.
And that's the biggest part, right, is claiming it. That's been the hurdle for me all these years. And that's why I'm inspired to do this podcast. Mm. It's like, what is that sovereign? It manifests in so many different ways. We learn more about it all the time as we practice it. And as I'm experiencing in more of my personal life, is boundaries also. Like it exists on when we're relating that personal sovereignty. Mm. And really just acknowledging who I am with emotions. Mm. At any time. It's not just about who I am with my food or my power or my water or with the government and my community. It's about me and who I am, yeah, showing
choosing,
up.
Choosing who you spend your time with, right? It's saying no.
Even when it's hard.
Right. Saying no to
accepting a no.
Or accepting a no. That's right. Saying no has been, it can be harder for me. Yeah.
Depends on who it is, right? Right. Yeah.
But choosing who we spend our time with. That's like, yeah, that's core to self-sovereignty. Like not just going with the default. Right. It's like, yeah, oh, this is who I grew up with. This is who I work with. These are my friends and they always have been. What do I do? It's like, you know, the five people you spend the most time with are like who you become,
right?
You know, influence you more than anything in the world. So you want to choose, you just roll with the default people that you happen to grow up with or whatever as your closest friends. It's like,
I mean, not to knock on the people we grew up with as friends, because I see them once in a while these days and I love to see them and they're great to see them, but you know, there's just a reason. And I felt shame around this for a while. I'm like, I went through this phase where I'm like, wow, I have like no more friends from when I grew up. Like, sure, like friends, we're friendly, but like we live across the country and never see them, a phone call once in a while. And I just felt like, oh, is that like kind of my fault for just throwing those relationships away?
That's because a sovereign individual.
Because I didn't care anymore. There was nothing there. It just kind of held me back. And now I just see it for what it is. Like there's value in it as, yeah, we grew up together. We share this. We'll always share that. Mm-hmm. But our lives have gone, you know, different directions. And my sovereign self, mm-hmm, has chosen a path that is not compatible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and our parents' influence too, you know, that's not just like government. It's just cultural influence, you know, like, oh, this is the way, this is what you do next. Now you graduated high school. Now you go, you know, choose your college, right? Now you
get a job,
you get your career, right?
Buy a house. Just,
that's right. Now you get married.
Get your
now
mortgage.
You get your house. Now you have a baby. This is the order of things. This is how it's always been. So like, why would you?
But I tell you, now that I have kids, I'm like, man, if only I had followed that path, it'd probably be a bit easier.
No, Jordan. We love our children.
We love our children.
That's for sure.
We love them too much.
But yeah, sovereignty. Yeah, it's like really a choice and choosing to make our own decisions, I think. Like, letting, like, deprogramming our unconscious commitments to just rolling with traditional structures or family structures or government, whatever, you know, mainstream culture, whatever it is, religion, and just choosing your own way.
So let's jump into the fun part. Money.
Ooh, money, money, money.
So I think one thing for me that I still process through a lot as like part of the Bitcoin community and, you know, like make sure you're financially sovereign, keep your money in something like Bitcoin instead of a bank, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That often overlooks a harsh reality for a lot of us, which is like savings. What? I'm like, yeah, I keep my Bitcoin and like I'm stoked to have it. I'm like, I'm never going to sell it. But then tough times come and I'm selling it. Right. And like,
no,
but what can I do? Right. I'm not about to, you know, I'm not about to pay the interest to the banks for my credit card. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe in some ways that would be saving money in the long run, but keeping the Bitcoin, I don't know, but I'm not about to sign that contract again. But point is, the whole Bitcoin thing is like, keep it in Bitcoin, you know, be sovereign over your wealth. But at the end of the day, that's not how a community stays sovereign, is by, you know, people holding wealth. A community sovereign by there being economical transactions happening, keeping us in abundance of what we need. Totally. Isn't that the point of money to begin with, is making sure we have what we need?
Yeah, currency, keeping the current moving. Money is just a tool to encourage, well, it should be a tool to encourage collaboration and encourage communities to work together to be able to make peace in transactions without having resentment or wanting to steal from each other, right? It's like, instead of using war to, you know, get your needs met, we use money.
And yeah, if soldiers don't cross a border, if goods don't cross a border, soldiers will.
Oh yeah, right.
Currency as something communities require doesn't have to be this paper that governments issue to us.
That's right. It seems crazy that, you know, in a country that claims to be so individual focused as opposed to globalist, right? That our money is just so top down oriented, you know, created at the top and controlled so heavily. You know, money really should be local, in my view. That's why I am the director and main promoter of Villages.io, community currency platform.
So let's talk about community currencies. Yeah.
So I'll say first, Bitcoin is a wonderful store of value, wonderful technology that I believe will guarantee many individual freedoms, freedom of privacy, freedom of association, the right to own property. You know, it has the potential to guarantee these rights and to protect them from adversary governments, especially in places where you have to be concerned about adversary governments. Here in the United States, our government is kind of gnarly, but compared to some of these places, I mean, we're very, very, very fortunate to have such great economic and personal freedom.
Most people have no idea. We complain about the United States government, but like, most people have no idea how lucky we are.
Yeah, very lucky.
Yeah. And the narrative is that it's just going to keep getting worse, more dystopian, but I don't necessarily buy into that. Yeah. I think that's a lot of fear mongering to just sell people.
Well, there's things we got to be aware of.
Oh, no, for sure. Right? We got to be aware of it.
Things we got to keep.
But even fighting, the Bitcoin narrative.
Fighting to protect. We got to keep fighting to protect our rights. Yeah. For
and
sure.
Maybe that's the exaggeration is needed. In order for this awareness to come out. But sometimes it is a bit, I think, over the top.
So I imagine Bitcoin as a wonderful store of value and a secure savings type of...
If you're blessed enough to have...
That's right. Savings. If you're blessed enough to accumulate savings, Bitcoin seems like it will develop as a secure means for that. But it's not a money like it. And people have said that all along, you know, and looking at different economic philosophies. I believe a money needs to have the capability of expanding to meet the production capacity of a community. You know, Bitcoin has a finite supply, which makes it scarce. and rare and valuable and deflationary. These are not qualities of a good money. These are, you know, qualities of potential qualities of a good store value. Money is something that we use every day. That's something that we want to be spending, something that we want to be using, something that, again, should be expandable to adjust for our community's production capacity.
Something that should be flowing, not like getting stagnant by sitting around.
Yeah. If there's people that need help with a project, and there's people that have services to offer, like, we should be able to match them. That should not be limited, especially by a scarce money. You know, I imagine Bitcoin as a very scarce money that people imagine this hyper Bitcoinization world where everybody's just using Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But the thing in that world is people aren't spending anything. You know, it's like people aren't using money. People aren't collaborating. There's no more. People aren't investing in big companies anymore. All of a sudden, Apple is like would become a tiny company. You know, like, people would divest from all these major corporations and just hold, like.
So you believe inflationary policies are healthier for economic purposes?
I do. Yeah. I believe. I do. But I don't believe that like usury style inflationary policies that require indefinite growth are good for us or anything. You know, again, this production capacity should be managed locally, you know, locally by us. I mean, villages, it's really individually, you know, you're managing the production capacity of your network individually.
So the village hour, which is the community currency of villages.io, that is in a sense inflationary because there's no cap on how big this mutual credit network is.
And anybody can create money
of these hours.
And there's always going to be people that default.
So why don't you explain it real quick for people unfamiliar?
So in villages, you know, I'm going to open up my new great description.
Your spiel.
Yeah, my spiel. do you want the one with all the benefits or just the technical description? Let's see here. I get this great pitch here with all the benefits.
Let's hear it all.
Okay. Villages.io is a community-driven currency system that fosters trust, local economic growth, and sustainable development. Users grant interest-free credit lines to each other with the village hours currency, which is valued at the local hourly wage for unskilled work. This innovative system bolsters the local economy by supporting businesses, promoting job opportunities, and reducing dependence on external financial institutions. By encouraging local consumption and cooperation, Villages.io contributes to community resilience, social capital, and environmental responsibility. So we do this by enabling payments to be made through trusted peers that enable transactions even without direct credit relationships. So because we're developing a trust network, you can make payments to people, or you can think of it as IOUs, or and credit is really the technical term. So it's like sending credit to your friends, sending credit to your peers. That credit's backed by you.
Credit can be used by other people your network.
Because you have a trust network, that credit can route through your peers to other people that you're not directly connected to.
And that network is essentially the credit limit is essentially your reputation within a trust network.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Your reputation's determined by your community, your credit rating. Right. Your community credit rating is determined by your peers, you know, and, you know, by the value that you bring to community, not just like the profit that you bring to a bank. Right. You know, we're used to this credit rating based economy. You know, we live in a reputation based economy, but our reputations are all set by banks. They're all sent by these, you know, multinational.
Yeah.
Giant.
You're just a number on a screen.
That's right. Yeah. But in reality, sure. Like, I don't know, one of my friends might have bailed on their credit agreement with a bank, but I don't care. They might still be adding a lot of value to my community.
Right.
And their relationship with some big bank, I could care less about their relationship with some big bank.
Right.
As long as, you know, they're real, like, emotional reputation, you know, like real life reputation, how they show up for their actual community, you know,
sure.
It's like really what it's about, right? That's what really should be determining someone's purchasing capacity, right?
And that sounds to me like a very important element of a sovereign community too, is reputation, is like the awareness of reputation. And like, hey, I want to show up with a good light here, and you'll be rewarded for it with that credit line, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah. Another thing with having a community driven reputation is, you know, some organizations, depending on what they're using their credit for, people might not really be that attached to them paying back their obligation. Right. I mean, you know, if it's, you know, nonprofit doing really positive things for the community, it's like, oh, so what if they aren't paying it back or are, you know, taking a long time or whatever? Like, they created this awesome thing in our community.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They're like, you know, it's investing in culture, not just in profit.
And so how would that work on the platform if they're super negative? They could just keep going negative and negative as long as people are choosing to acknowledge them.
People are okay with that.
Transact
sure.
with them.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, so that's like an interesting niche case of how things can work.
And we haven't seen that yet.
No, we haven't seen that happening yet. But I imagine that would be a likely thing to see. Also, it's like you're not paying back this credit with a scarce money or something that you have to earn externally. You know, you're not paying it back with dollars. You're not paying it back with bitcoins. You're paying it back with your time, with your services.
Which is what we all are trying to do anyway by trying to find work.
Or that's right. To find gigs. You got this like third party money that you can't create yourself for some reason. It's like only banks are allowed to create it.
Yeah. Well, beyond just creating, it's just the ethos of spending it.
Yeah,
sharing it or whatever it is like, it's definitely a mentality of scarcity for most people. Like,
even though
they just keep printing them,
it's still pretty scarce. Like,
yeah.
And people still want to hoard their, like, hold on to their cash, right?
Yeah. Well, just like people want to hoard Bitcoin.
I think people want to hoard Bitcoin more than their cash. You know,
again, what I'm saying, though, is Bitcoin has that same problem or whatever you want to call it. It is. People are still hoarding it, but at least it's got integrity in the fact that it really is scarce.
Well, with dollars, people aren't actually hoarding it, though. People are investing it. You keep your money in a savings account, all that money's being invested.
If you
keep it in a savings account in a credit union, then all that money's actually being invested locally, which is great. But again, there's the issue at the core of it, of the money itself, right?
Right, right.
That is losing value, is out of the control of our communities, and is not in par with the production capacity. And we have, right now, we have so much more money than there is production capacity in our system, which creates a really dangerous setting for, you know, potential inflation or hyperinflation crisis, which would just be devastating.
And that's remedied with a mutual credit network locally.
Yeah. There's one great remedy: having a community currency mutual credit system that's not valued in dollars. That's why we chose a different unit of account. We do not use dollars on villages. I mean, you can create the same system and use any unit of account. You can use dollars. You can use bitcoins. You can do quarts of honey. I know there's a community currency in Washington that uses eggs. Eggs is their unit of account. So
you pay for everything with eggs?
Yeah, egg credits. It's just a unit of account.
Oh, they're not real eggs.
Not real eggs. Oh, no, okay. It's just a unit of account that it, where each unit is equal to the value of a local free range egg.
But and so you could technically generate more currency by having chickens.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, something or like honey. That. It's really more of a measurement,
mm-hmm.
measurement right, value okay. than yeah. anything. You know, because the dollar is showing itself to not necessarily be a stable measure of value.
Right.
We have to find other things that
well, for
are,
us. It's funny. Meanwhile, in Argentina, they don't use the peso.
Right.
They use the dollar.
Yeah. More stable than the Argentine peso for sure. I mean, most of the world is still trying to get dollars. Just want most of yeah. the world. They just want dollars.
It's funny. Here we are all here complaining about dollars and getting into Bitcoin. And most
well,
of the
we
world is still
the,
trying to get the dollar.
We haven't had an inflationary crisis here yet.
Yeah.
Thank well, God.
I mean, it's not a crisis, but we've seen it.
We're seeing it happen, yeah. but has not yet shown itself to be a crisis. And
do you think we're going to see it?
Well, I mean, people have been saying that.
People have been saying it, but what do you think?
Forever. I mean, I've been yeah. saying it for. I've been saying that for 20 years. So, you know, I've become skeptical at this point.
I've actually been very impressed, even just the last few years. Like, obviously, we've seen some shit since yeah. 2020, since that printing spree. But
oh
like,
yeah,
I've been really impressed just the last like year and a half. Of like,
well, inflation's actually gone down a little bit.
Yeah, I know. It's yeah. So all these narratives, like, I don't, you know, sometimes I just realize like, yeah, we've got the right intentions and we see through this whole dollar thing, but there's a lot of marketing going on in the Bitcoin community and whatever it might be. You
I know we're in our Twitter bubbles, right?
Look at we're all in our bubbles.
Yeah.
And sometimes the future catastrophes aren't what they seem.
Right. But in the meantime, great opportunity to start learning about community currencies, start learning about Bitcoin, start learning how you can be establishing more sovereignty in your own life and more interdependence and sovereignty as a community. You know, social permaculture is what I call that.
Mm.
And that's through, you know, not just through financial means, but like real trust building activities, you know, like whether that is dance or yoga or singing, you know, just like we got to be building trust and got to be feeling more connected to our communities and
the arts and creativity is a
yeah.
nice path towards that, huh?
Well, in my head, they're just amazing ways to connect with people and feel oneness with other people. You know,
I think anything that's kind of opening up a display of vulnerability naturally builds a lot of trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're vulnerable with someone or you're witnessing someone being vulnerable, there's that connection.
So there's all these layers to sovereignty. You know, there's the individual choice layer, right? Of choosing not to follow the trail that was set for us. There's the interpersonal, like emotional dynamic, like building real interpersonal, like trust dynamics and real relationships, learning how to communicate, you know, is a big one. Like, I love, but like nonviolent communication, Marshall Rosenberg's work on how to communicate with empathy and be heard. Yeah, so there's communication, and then technological is like kind of like the fourth layer, you know, on there. The other ones are so much more essential, I think, but technology is definitely one of those layers, and learning how to use more sovereign mindful technology, whether that's switching over to a secure email platform like Proton Mail, or starting to use Signal instead of Facebook Messenger, right? And you know, learning how to use Bitcoin, learning how to secure your own keys, building a trust network for exchanging credit and money, you know, building or utilizing these new communication networks, you know, that don't have, you know, don't have the traditional centralized
middleman.
Yeah, system. What, Noster is a cool one that I've been looking at a lot. It's like the
bigger Bitcoin bubble.
Yeah, if you're not
Bitcoin culture bubble.
Yeah, if you're not in the Bitcoin bubble, you probably don't know Noster, but
yeah. And you probably never will. That's the sad part.
That is the sad part. Yeah. I and that's part of it too. It's like, you know, education. Like, yeah, we just fixed one of the algorithms on Villages today, but you know, will anybody ever use that algorithm? It's like, we just solved the algorithm that'll bring world peace.
Right.
Nobody cares or understands her. and maybe they'll use it someday.
I think, well, that's something I've thought about a lot when you think of shit coins, right?
Oh, man.
Is like, there's been so many like, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. And up to a certain point before it's explored and you realize, oh, like Bitcoin can just do it, like whatever. There is some validity to some of these explorations. I mean, even look, Ethereum is still going on, this experiment. And I think we'll see the end of it. I hope we'll see the end of it sooner than later. Yeah. But
well, in the beginning. The floor. Yeah, we couldn't even do that stuff on Bitcoin.
Oh, no, so. Even still.
But now we're seeing Ethereum isn't working. So that's why we never. Anyway. I won't go,
but in
I
the
won't
beginning, yeah, well, but in the beginning,
Bitcoin maximalist mindset,
but in the beginning, there was some important experiments to be done and Ethereum did it and all the things on top of it. And there's been so much learned, so much money lost. And
I'm glad it wasn't my money that was lost.
Well, some of it was, we've all lost money there, right? Like, come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the day, we just start to realize that, okay, like they're good experiments, but they're not these solutions. But my point is moving the energy forward. So sure, if no one uses this algorithm, the energy is moving forward thanks to your efforts. And that is contributing more to the collective here. Mm-hmm. And just people would hear this, people use it briefly.
People can experiment. People can start learning, you know, because I mean, mutual credit systems can be done without any technology. I mean, these types of systems have been happening for millennia. You know, the first writing, you know, in 3000 BC.
Accounts of people's debts.
Exactly. Like on cuneiform. And it's like, yeah, just tracking, you know, oh, so-and-so picked up this many pounds of spices. And so-and-so gave this person a donkey, whatever, stuff like that, yeah. All carved into stone.
Right.
You know? But now we got these permanent ledgers. We don't need stone anymore. We got distributed... Yeah, technologies.
The time chain.
Yeah, the time chain.
Which is great if you don't have to worry about predatory governments. And,
oh, yeah, looking at every transaction.
Well, like you said, freedom of association is important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can all be done privately now, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, very interesting dynamics. Again, dynamics of a Bitcoinization, hyper-Bitcoinization world. And lots of people's minds, lots of economic philosophers will say that that will put us in an economic dark age.
What will Bitcoin?
If we
hyper-Bitcoinization?
Yeah, if we are living with a you know, deflationary money as our sole
I've means never heard anyone say that.
Of exchange, it will halt development, it'll stop. Stop technological growth because people won't invest. People will keep their money in their hardware wallet. They're not going to. Why would you invest your money in Apple when you're making more money? Just keep stashing it in your wallet, right? Why would you invest in Google when it's making more money just sitting there in your.
Well, it's funny. I have a guest coming up soon from Berlin, and his argument is that we'll never even get there because it's so silly. Like you, and then you're saying like, if we do get there, it'll be a dark age. And this guy's right. Like,
but no, I
people
mean,
want to invest. People want to get shit done. That's who we are.
We've
humans.
Always used credit as money. Human, that's the first money. It's always existed. And Bitcoin's a new technology. It's a new concept. You know, it looks like gold and people have used gold for a long time too, in lots of places, but gold is not as universal as credit is. You know, if you meet somebody and they're new to this world, an alien or something, you're like, oh, I'll give you this chunk of gold if you help me with this project. They'll be like, what is this metal? I'll just, I mean, I got this lab in my freaking spaceship. I can just alchemize that, right? Who knows, right? It's like, who cares? Why do I want this shiny metal? It's shiny. All right. Same with Bitcoin. It's like, why would I want this thing? It's just a scarce unit. What's it even backed by other people? If they don't know that other people accept it, that's really what makes it valuable. But if you say, hey, can I get an hour? Can I get your help for an hour on this project? And I'll help you for an hour on a project at a later time. I'm like, duh. You know, who doesn't understand like the value right. of that?
Well, hopefully an alien would. Yeah,
an alien. Yeah, anybody would.
Like help? I don't need help.
But... Right. Oh, you'll get me back. Great. Sounds good. It's a deal.
Well, one last thought and then we can close it up. That just makes me think of the whole, remember Ender's Game or even I think Dune, plenty of these old sci-fi books and movies. The aliens, they're always these like hives. They're like bees where they have a centralized like mothership, a queen bee. But then everything they're doing as individuals all are for the hive. Mm-hmm. So it makes me think of, you know, an alien comes down and you go, yeah, I'll trade you an hour of my time. And maybe that alien wouldn't understand.
Maybe they wouldn't understand.
That's just what you do anyway.
Yeah, sure.
It's not even about like, well, why would you talk about that? That's just what you do.
Maybe that's where we're going.
Yeah, maybe.
Beyond the numbers, beyond the checks and balances to pure trust. Like, pure trusted, abundant.
I've always believed that's where we're
culture,
going.
Gift culture. That sounds great.
Pretty optimistic. And I think it would take a long time. At the same time, things don't need to take that long. Well, slipstreams and wormholes are real. You know what I mean? There can be a lot of social evolution that happens in a short period of time.
Yeah. It's like again, Moore's Law. I think making the choice and then developing the relationships, right? Those are the two first steps. Making the choice to step away from the
and trust in yourself.
Yeah.
Make that choice to trust in yourself. Right.
To trust in yourself, to make your own decisions, you know, to know that you're trusting the authority of your own consciousness.
Right.
Yeah.
Any where can people find you? Anything you want to shout out?
My name is Daniel Levy. You can find me on Twitter, DNA Levity. Is my Twitter handle. Villages.io is our community currency project. And you can also explore my other purpose project, Humandalas.
Humandalas.com.
Yeah.
Sovereign States of Mind.